Snack Bar Games Podcast. Welcome to Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 220. I'm Graham, and we have the full complement of people here today, Matt, Jerry, Sean, and Andrew. How's it going, guys?
I learned dash kick. Just now.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
It's going pretty well. I learned dash kick.
Great.
I'm chasing time paradoxes.
Yep.
I'm sick, but... otherwise, okay.
Jerry?
He's sick because he's not chasing time paradoxes. I'm
answering a quiz game.
Okay. Great. But so, yeah. This week we actually have some new releases, which it's been a while. It's been like a month.
The biggest of which is Never Dead, of course, right?
Right, Never Dead. This is going to be the Never Dead podcast.
Yeah, we've all played it. We all are.
Yep, all of us.
Now it's the game of the year. We don't need to play any more video games. So,
we totally didn't completely ignore that game and not play it.
Yeah. How could we ignore it? It's everywhere.
Yeah.
never dies.
Yeah, the marketing for that game's been fantastic. Like, I can't go out of my house without seeing anything about Never Dead.
Yep. All right, but no, seriously, we're going to talk a lot about Final Fantasy 13-2, Soul Calibur 5. Maybe talk about some of these demos that are coming out for the games that are coming out later in spring. And later in the show, we're going to be talking about the GBA. We did a feature on that that ran yesterday, actually. And... we want to share a little bit more about that system because when we were all talking about it, I think we realized that that's just such a great library.
Like we said, the Super Nintendo of handhelds.
Yeah. And sometimes literally.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely had a lot of Super Nintendo games.
Which is okay.
Sure. But yeah, let's go ahead and get started with some news. So, Sean, what... is news.
News. Well, we have a few things. We have the Vita 3G package that you can buy has been spruced up by Sony. Apparently, people weren't pre-ordering enough of them. They were getting the Wi-Fi version instead. So yeah. They decided to, for no additional cost, give people who pick up the 3G version an 8 gig memory stick, a free PSN game, and one free month of the 3G data plan at the 250 megabyte level.
Yep. So here are my thoughts on that, and I want to hear from you guys about it. The 3G version is going to go away pretty quickly, I feel like. There are a lot of moves lately. I know Best Buy is actually starting to offer this deal just now, where if you get the 3G version and activate the data plan through them, they'll give you a $50 gift card. A lot of the parties involved want the 3G to work because it can get them more money, but I don't think it's going to. And, you know, AT&T's throwing in that free game with that free month of data, but the trick with that free month of data is that if you have to cancel it before the end of the month or else you get charged for the next month. And if you don't get charged for that second month, then they don't give you that free game. It's only after the trial expires and you start paying that they'll give you the free a $10, I think, PSN game.
So is it really free?
No.
No, it's $15.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the point that you're making, and no, it's not really free. But one, if you're getting the 3G version over the Wi-Fi version, you probably do want to at least try the 3G.
I just think back to the E3 press conference when Sony announced AT&T was their partner, and best moment of the show.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not that fond of AT&T, but I do think they get a bad rap for every tech journalist basically being in the same, like, 3-mile radius, all using iPhones at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't think AT&T is quite as bad everywhere else with its, you know, signal and reliability and things like that.
No, I've never had any trouble with it at all.
AT&T is actually the best service provider we have over here.
Puerto Rico.
Yep. And then again, the competition is pretty much just Sprint, so.
You know what? That's just as fair as judging a company on their reception in San Francisco. We should just make all of our decisions based on how reliable company is in Puerto Rico.
Well, then we don't like Amazon.
No, Amazon's horrible.
It is.
We especially hate the part where they cover some costs. And,
yeah, no release day shipping.
Yep. Of course, I know a lot of people who have issues with release day shipping not making to them on release day, so. But
yeah, that would be a problem.
You know, we digress. It is a better deal to give them these bonuses, especially the 8-gig card, because Sony is charging a premium for a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, so, it's normally $30 for that one.
Right. So having that extra in there is nice. I really wish they'd bundle something with the Wi-Fi version, or have a first edition bundle of the Wi-Fi version or something, because I'm part of that group that I don't care about 3G. You can't really play games over it. It's not going to be fast enough to do that. So companies aren't really supporting it. I mean, you're still going to have to download large games over Wi-Fi. So that part, the 3G seems to be for if you want to use it for Twitter.
Like the browser, stuff like that. Social networking stuff on the go, maybe.
Like, are there people who want that don't have smartphones?
I was going to say, like, it seems like everyone who would want that already has a phone that could do that.
If the Vita were a phone, then we could talk. If it could replace your phone and you could play games on it, I don't care if it's huge. Like, if I could carry it around and I wouldn't need to carry around my phone too, then I could care about those features. But
then people can continue to claim that handheld gaming is dead. Or at least dedicated gaming handhelds are dead.
I mean, you know what? I don't even care about those people.
Yeah.
Like, if you had a dedicated, like, I mean, phone companies have tried this in the past. You know, mm-hmm. had the N-Gauge.
And the Xperia Play.
Even the Xperia Play, which wasn't Sony Computer Entertainment making a phone. That was
Ericsson.
Sony Ericsson. That was...
Is that thing still around?
Yes, it is.
They've got like 4 or 5 different versions now.
And they've been putting out a lot of interesting things in the PlayStation Suite. And they're doing a decent job making a standardized platform for Android gaming. And I applaud them for that. I'm not sure it's going to help them long term, but I do think they're doing a decent job at that. But we haven't seen, like, you know, if Sony or if Nintendo made a phone, but it wasn't primarily a phone. You know, at this point, I think a lot of that talk happened earlier before the advent of touchscreens and things like that. If you just have that hand, you know, have just like, take your Vita. It's got a microphone and a speaker on it. Just put a phone interface on that touchscreen and just done. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want it to look like a phone. It doesn't need to look like a phone. Heck, I mean, I don't even care if it doesn't have a head, you know, if I just plug in a headset and then I can make Skype calls on it.
I was going to say, but then you run into the problem of just looking like an idiot when you try to talk on it, unless you're using a headset.
Yeah.
Do you remember when the N-Gauge came out? You had to talk on the side of it, and it looked like you were communicating with a taco. It was ridiculous.
Yep, and you had to take out the battery to change the game.
Oh, yeah, that was brilliant.
You know, there was the, do you guys remember the, I'm trying to remember the model number, the second N-Gauge that fixed all that, but no one cared at that point?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The QX, I think? I'm not sure.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, I
just remember they made it smaller and less stupid.
Yeah, you could talk in front of it.
Nobody cared by that point.
Yeah, and then they released a pretty good portable version of Civ on it, but never mind.
I actually had one person who cared about it, like, a year after we took it off the shelves, some guy came by asking if we had one. I was like, no, it failed. It doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, that poor guy.
I mean, you know, I have to say, if I saw a sealed on the shelf Engage, I'd be pretty interested in that right now.
Even if it was one where you had, even if it was the original model,
I wouldn't be using it as a phone, so I don't care.
Well, yeah, then to play games, you'd have to take out the battery every time. I
have a Virtual Boy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have a Game Gear.
That explains everything, though.
Yeah.
Do you have a Sega Nomad?
I don't have a Sega Nomad, and that's kind of a sore subject.
I had one, and the screen broke. I was so bummed.
Oh no! Well, then you just have a Genesis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know where it went though.
Oh. I was so excited. I wanted to get a Game Gear growing up, and then they got me a Nomad. I was like, oh, cool. What does it do? Oh, you can just play, you know, your Sega Genesis games on it. Oh, great. Does it last a long time? No, about 2 hours. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but you can play your games, your console games, on a small screen and let the rest of the people in your household use the TV.
I'm going to say something right now. I think my reason for my quote-unquote hatred of handhelds came from the Nomad. The Nomad.
No.
Blame it all on the Nomad.
Aww.
If I had gotten a Game Gear that year, I would be buying a Vita at launch.
That's not true, because you would have had a Game Gear.
Right. And then I would have had a Neo Geo Pocket.
Yeah, I mean, a Game Gear is just a Nomad that plays Master System games.
True.
Basically. Except for it can't play all of them. It has to play the ones that were specifically remanufactured. So, no, you wouldn't have done that. You'd still hate it. Now, if you'd had a Turbo Express, then you really would have fostered...
Or Jaguar.
Jaguar's not a handheld system.
Was that the Lynx?
That was the Lynx.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the Lynx. Now, the Lynx was awesome. It's expensive. It didn't have good games, but, like, as hardware... I mean, as hardware, we're talking about, like, the things that made those... other handhelds not great. The Lynx was nice.
But it didn't have Tetris, so it doesn't matter.
It didn't
have Klax.
Anything.
It was time for Klax.
Had California games.
Oh man.
Gauntlet.
Yep. Yep.
Gauntlet's pretty damn good.
Yep, yeah. Single player Gauntlet. That's what you like.
Of course.
What, you mean there was no online play on the Lynx?
There was, but you had to pay for a 3G plan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so no one cared.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, more news.
More news. Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning is going to have a online pass where if you buy it new, you'll get access to a 7-quest quest line that that others will have to purchase.
Yep.
It's day one DLC then.
It's day one DLC. It's not. They said that it's not content that was ever planned as part of the game. They just decided to reward new purchasers with the first DLC that they were going to offer.
Yeah, but it's not an online pass at that point, then.
True. But that's the closest similarity we have for it. Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot like the Catwoman missions. It's integrated into the single player if you have it.
It's more like the Dragon Age 2 stuff.
Mm.
Or the Cerberus Network.
Or the Cerberus Network.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with this because it's not... I mean, I guess you could try to make the case that they actually cut this out of the game and try to and they're selling it separately. There's no proof either way, but I think it's cool that they reward people who buy games new and are dedicated and want to check out this game when it launches and want to support this new studio. And
right.
I don't know. The way they're approaching it isn't exactly perfect still, but I don't know. I think it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean the thing that I'm most bothered by when they do things like this is when they cut out features of the game. When it's just extra content, it's like, oh, you want a new quest line? Then, that I'm not bothered by. That I think is all right.
Like, the Catwoman stuff was handled so poorly because they seemed to introduce it as a major part of the game. And some people, including myself, still have a sneaking suspicion that it was, they're like, oh, man, we need to do this online pass thing. What do we have? And, they pointed to the Catwoman stuff. I don't know.
When Arkham City was first being like introduced and developers were talking about it, they were actually hyping up the whole Catwoman thing as just part of the integral game. It was only at the very last minute where they went, oh wait, that's locked behind an online pass.
Yeah. it was kind of a mess the way they handled it. I don't think they should have shown it off at E3. I think they should have said, oh yeah, we're going to have Catwoman, and that's it, and not say anything more about it. Not say that it's going to be DLC or an online pass thing or anything. They should have not shown it off until right before the game came out, when yeah. they were ready to introduce that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, their job is to sell new copies of the game, so... Yeah. I don't think they so much care if you get mad if you're the kind of person who buys games used anyway.
I bought it. I bought it at launch.
Yeah. But, you know, Reckoning is doing so many interesting things right, I think. Like this demo thing they're doing. I mean, it's a sneaky little way to get you to care, but... It's a sneaky little way to get you to care that I'm okay with. Like, try out this game, and, you know, we'll give you extra items for the final game. We'll give you extra items for Mass Effect. Like, sure, yeah. Like,
that's cool. Know,
it's effective. I played the Reckoning demo, and, like, now I know whether I want to buy Reckoning.
To be fair, that demo, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the demo, but I'm still interested in the game because the demo was kind of a mess. It was buggy. It was problematic. Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean...
But it gave you a general understanding of how the game functioned.
Yeah, and I liked that it opened up the area and let you explore for a little bit, because games like that never really come through very well in demos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dragon Age and such, because like the whole thing is that like you get to go out and like explore, and you don't get exploration in demos that much. So I liked the way they approached it.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I didn't think when I first started hearing about this game, I heard it was going to be, you know, from some of the main designers behind Oblivion and things like that. But I didn't think it was going to be as open as it was. And now I'm hearing like people who are reviewing it now saying how much longer it is than they expected it to be. So it seems like it's got a lot of content. So that's good.
Gabe from Penny Arcade said he likes it more than Skyrim.
Yeah, which is crazy, but I could believe it. The combat is pretty great.
Yeah, if you're the kind of person who likes combat. It's more interesting than,
Yeah, I was going to say, Gabe didn't really like Skyrim. He played it until he got to the Greybeards and then quit.
Which is a shame, but I guess I can't blame anyone who can't get into Skyrim, but at the same time, it seems like a game that opened up that series to a lot of new audiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, more news.
More news. Nintendo's finally giving us individual accounts on our systems.
But not yet. But
not yet. Only on the Wii U and the 3D. Oh, possibly only on the Wii U. And potentially on the 3DS as well. Yeah.
As I understand it, that is coming to the 3DS.
Okay.
That you can share your account between the two, and that technically the 3DS is running on the framework that is the Nintendo Network.
Yeah.
Because the Nintendo Wi-Fi Connect, or whatever it's called, Wii Connect, is not compatible with DLC, from what I understand, and so they're using it for Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy, since it's going to have DLC. What?
Huh? I like saying it because it's not a word.
Oh, okay.
It's rhythm.
Non-words are fun to say.
Yes, but they're really bad to type in articles.
I still don't know how to spell it.
Take the end off of theater and the... And just, add rhythm to it.
Yeah, you just started saying rhythm already. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's easier to spell out and pronounce than transferring.
Also, the Wii U may not be
transferring is just transferring with an A.
Sure, I forget how many consonants there go in transferring at particular points.
Don't forget
revengeance is also easy to spell, but not a word.
Revengeance is awesome.
My favorite thing is that they had to explain in the trailer
that it's revenge with a vengeance.
Revenge with a vengeance.
Just in case you didn't get it. Oh.
I thought it was vengeance again.
I just like, get it? Yeah.
Also, the Wii U is possibly not going to be the name of the system. Apparently, Nintendo realizes that people don't like the name, and so they may change it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Everyone hated the name Wii when it came out. And
does anyone not still hate the name Wii? You say that like gets past tense.
I think everyone got over it. You know?
With names like the Dreamcast, I got over consoles being called stupid things a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think the reason they're considering it this time is because apparently their focus groups, whoever those are, didn't know that the Wii U is different than the Wii.
Yeah.
Other than just the controller.
Oh, and they're dealing with that with the DS too.
Yeah, yes. I was going to say that. That I think that's really been pointed out to them. That the 3DS, people just... I think they've been okay in the past. Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, that kind of thing. Where, with a couple exceptions, and really, it's really near the end of the Game Boy Advance life cycle. When there was a new system, it was new in some way. Whereas, since they've had the DS, the DS Lite, and the DSi, people have gotten used to just, as long as there's DS in there, it's a DS of some sort. So they've had a little trouble getting people's like, no, it's not just our new DS with, you know, now it's shiny. But I think they are increasingly aware of that. Especially because the letter U isn't going to work well online. If you ever try to search for things, it's just going to need to have the letter U somewhere on the page. And then we, there are definitely branding issues with that.
I wouldn't blame them if they change it. There was a rumor going around before the name was officially announced when everyone was speculating about what the system was going to be, that the name was going to be just called Nintendo or the Nintendo. I love that. I want that.
I'd be fine with that.
Nintendo.
The Nintendo.
The Nintendo.
Sure.
It's a reboot. It's the Nintendo.
But no, I mean, I can't imagine them not having Wii in there somewhere. But I wouldn't be surprised if they actually reworked it a bit. But then again, I also wouldn't be surprised if they didn't touch it. And, you know, I don't think people liked the name Wii. I don't think, you know, but I think people just, you know, yeah, they got used to it. But they also, you know, they played the games. It became a physical thing and not about branding after a while.
Why is it the consoles have better product names than the actual name of the consoles?
Dolphin.
I was just going to say that.
Revolution.
Katana.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Revolution.
Well, hey, Katana's cool. I don't... Dolphin...
It is cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Atlantis. I would rather play...
Atlantis is pretty cool, too. Nitro.
I'd rather play the Dolphin than the GameCube, personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem with that is it's always... When people come up with project names, it's a bunch of, like, geeky programmers coming up with something that sounds cool to geeky people. You know?
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the problem with Revolution was that, you know, it had its chips Broadway and Hollywood, and there are times when they go a little off track. But no, I mean, yeah, I wish they'd stick with that sometimes. But, I mean, I'm trying to think, have there ever been instances of a system keeping its project name?
Don't think so.
I don't know for sure, but the Sega systems all sounded like project names. Saturn.
Mega Drive.
You know, I'm not...
Nomad.
Oh, the Nomad.
Nomad might actually be the project name for that thing. I mean, I definitely know, you know... We kind of know the cool names for stuff. Of course, there was the Ultra 64 was the project name of the Nintendo 64. I can't think of anything that kept its project name. I'm not sure Neo Geo Pocket ever had a project name. I'm pretty sure they just what project is this? Neo Geo Pocket.
I guess you could say PlayStation because it was going to be the Nintendo PlayStation. I don't know if they called it anything before that.
Yeah, it's going to be the Super Nintendo Disk Drive.
Yeah, but they still you can find things where it still says PlayStation on it.
Yeah, they were going to call it the PlayStation.
Okay.
But that said, I think that was just an early branding. I think there were code names going on there. But I think that's exactly it. The small projects don't have notable code names because they weren't high profile enough to need to be talked as under a code name. So, I don't know. But, Wii U.
What else are they going to call it if they want to keep the Wii in there? The Wii 2? I don't know.
Super Wii.
Sure, I'll take that.
Yeah, Super Wii.
Almost anything is better than Wii U.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think also the problem with the Wii U name is from these issues that keep cropping up as more things leak out about the tech that they were using, you know, that they are having trouble supporting more than one screen in a controller.
Uh-huh.
You know, that people aren't necessarily too happy about, I can just play games on this screen or own the big screen being the focus rather than, you know, running two different screens at once being their primary thing they want to show off. And that's all kind of it's just me, I guess. Like, at that point, it's like, why is this not a portable kind of problem? But, you know, the name can stick. All right, John.
Next is something that anyone with an Xbox Live Silver account should pay attention to. If you don't care about Mass Effect 3, or if you do, you should download the demo, because it will upgrade your Silver until Mass Effect 3 comes out.
Which is awesome.
That is nice of them. I'm wondering how that economics is working out, but
I'm assuming Microsoft is hoping that people will decide to discontinue it.
I've already seen people complaining about, well, what about my gold membership? Is that going to be extended now? Are we going to get something out of this for people who already pay for gold? I'm like, who cares? You can't
People are petulant.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. We saw that with the Welcome Back program. Sony was really generous, and I'm as someone who pretty much had invested as much as he could in those things, I was happy to see that, but they definitely didn't need to do that. Some people are
entitled. You could say the same thing about the Ambassador stuff for the 3DS.
Yeah. It was a nice goodwill gesture. I definitely think it's weird when people complained that they didn't get the Ambassador games when they didn't buy the thing until later.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, like, silly entitlement, you know.
Yeah.
Great.
I can understand being upset that you can't buy the Game Boy Advance games from it, but not that you didn't get them for free.
I get the feeling we'll be seeing those Game Boy Advance games for sale.
I'm sure we will, too.
Yeah, they'll definitely be up there at some point.
It would be silly of them not to throw away that money.
Yep. But it's possible that they're waiting to tie it to the Nintendo Network or something. I don't know. It would be nice to see that kind of thing happen where you could buy a GBA game and play it on both.
That'd be cool.
I love my Game Boy player, but it's not the best video quality at this point.
No.
And it doesn't bother me that much, except for it does when I switch over from, you know, my other component inputs, and I'm sitting there like, this looks so great, like a 2-inch screen. I can imagine that happening, but I can never explain Nintendo's business decisions.
Nobody can.
Sean, you got something to close this out?
Last thing is that Rayman 3 HD is finally heading to Xbox Live and PSN later this month. Next month, rather.
Great.
I've never played it. I'm looking forward to it.
Hoodlum Havoc.
I don't think a lot of people played it. I remember it coming out and everyone made such a big deal about Rayman 2, but no one really talked about Rayman 3.
It's because they released Rayman 2 17 times.
Yeah.
In between that, though, was it already out a bunch before Rayman 3 came out?
Well, they did. They released it on the PlayStation, on the N64, on the Dreamcast, mm-hmm. and on the PS2 by that point.
But, everyone basically had a copy of Rayman 2, even if they didn't want it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember, was Rayman Arena before or after 3?
That was before.
Yeah,
That is part of the reason why I was kind of like, on Rayman at that point. It's like, Arena was kind of a mess, and I don't really see...
I didn't so much mind that game, but there wasn't much game to that game.
No.
Yeah.
There wasn't much anything to that game.
It had local multiplayer fun, right?
Oh, yeah, it was really fun.
I actually did enjoy it for a few months as, like, let's take a break from playing Melee for a while.
Are you sure you don't mean a few weeks or maybe a few days?
I mean a few months, like once a week.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Still, it seems...
Who'd play that game by themselves?
I did for a little while.
That's the problem.
Well, no, I did play with friends eventually, but I mean, got really bored of it really quickly. When we had Smash Bros. Just sitting there like, yeah, we got this other game that's pretty good. Let's play that.
Yeah, all right.
But I've heard good things about Rayman 3, so it'll be cool to see.
Yeah, it is about time for that game to get a re-release, because...
And I think if you...
Rayman 2.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you pre-order the... Isn't Rayman on PC, Rayman Origins on PC, is
right,
that coming
right.
soon?
Yeah, as a pre-order bonus, you get a copy of Rayman 3, which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what they did for Rayman Origins on console. You get a free copy of Beyond Good and Evil.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So if you don't have Rayman Origins, you should buy it on PC or just get the console version for dirt cheap, because that game is awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you don't have Rayman Origins... Pause. Come back with a copy of Rayman Origins. Actually, you can pause this and play Rayman Origins and come back like next Thursday. Yeah.
Is Rayman 3 HD upgraded, or are they just plopping it right onto the...
It is HD upgraded.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I can't imagine that doing much, but yeah.
No, probably not.
Well, it was a 2003 game. Look less like garbage.
Like the... make it look more like garbage.
Yeah. I haven't played the... I've played a couple of the PS2 releases on PSN, but not on my HDTV yet, so I'm still kind of afraid to do that, too. Do they look okay?
That's not fun.
Is it not good?
Well, I mean, those games are not upgraded. So, yeah. Like, I mean, Jerry, actually, you know what? You talk about that, because you played, like, freaking all of them.
Oh, there is a difference, though. I played all of them on an SDTV. I haven't actually touched them since I got the new one.
Ah, fair.
Everyone is afraid.
Yeah, well, I've played a little, and I mean, it's not bad.
PS1 classics though look pretty great on an HDTV.
Right.
Yeah. I played a bunch of those.
Some of those look great on an HDTV.
Oh, some of them not? Because Klonoa looks fantastic.
Well, I mean, like if you pay attention, like the ones that were really heavily polygonal mm-hmm. are not great.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And that's kind of the similar thing. Is that the PS2, basically they're running at that same resolution that the PS1 games are, but at the time it was trying to push what looked good, and that never ages well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's all right. And the games they picked, especially at launch, and they picked like Odin Sphere, those games are gorgeous no matter how you experience them. But yeah, I do wish at some point that, you know, they would support the "I have an HDTV, smooth out this retro game" function.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are filters because the, you know, illicit PC emulation community has perfected a lot of that smoothing technology.
Well, even a lot of re-releases put that in there. Like, that's an option in the Sonic Sega Collection and stuff.
Right. But yeah, so I wish there was just a little bit of, like, I don't want to have to drag my CRT back in the living room mode. But, yeah. Should be good.
I think, is Rayman, does it have a price yet? Because I'm going to assume it's about the same as Beyond Good and Evil.
I'm going to assume it'll be 800 points.
Yeah, I'm going to say 800. Especially because, I mean, I could imagine some games fetching the 15, but
not Rayman.
That's a $10 game. Yeah, it doesn't have the rabid community that it doesn't have.
I was gonna say, wait, did you say rabid?
You never know. It might have the rabid community.
Oh no! All right, let's move on and start with what we've been playing. And
I bet they're raving.
Let's go ahead and start by talking about 13-2. Sean and Jerry, you've been playing that, right?
Yep.
Yep. I think Jerry's a little farther than I am.
Probably a lot farther.
Probably. I've only played for about 7 hours so far.
So, thoughts?
It is much better than 13 was. And I liked 13.
How many times better?
Oh.
Two?
Three?
Whoa.
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 It has towns.
I was expecting
two. It has time travel. It has monster collecting. It has paradoxes. And it has quick time events. That's six times better.
Well, see, I was with you with time travel. Then you said quick time events.
Yeah, you said it like it's a plus.
And monster collecting is probably on the negative side, too.
The way it does the quick time events are not a problem. They only show up every once in a while in a
remember, big box battle. Remember, they don't have quick time events. They were very clear about that, Sean. This game does not have quick time events.
Cinematic events.
Cinematic action.
Actions, yes.
Sequences, right?
Oh, man.
Yes.
I've gone through... I have no idea how much the game. I've played 7 hours, and I've only done three cinematic actions.
Yes.
So they have CASs. So they have QTEs. They have CASs.
Sure.
Yep. If there's so few in there, do they punish you a lot if you mess them up?
I haven't messed any up, so I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, Sean's just too good.
Yep.
Yeah, they're very hard to mess up.
They're pretty easy to do. So I've gone through, I want to say, quarter of the game, and I haven't messed a single one up yet.
So, I mean, as I understand it, it's basically, sorry, you can't walk away and get a sandwich. You have to sit here and hold the controller kind of thing, as opposed to actually...
Nah, because so far they've only happened with, like, the bigger boss battles, as opposed to, you know, happening all the time.
Oh, it's not like during a cutscene?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
They're, like, part of the big boss battles.
Okay.
Every once in a while you'll have, in the middle of battle, you'll have a cinematic start, and then... Partway through it, you'll have to do an action.
Oh, that's fine. That's not even a big deal.
It adds bonus damage, basically.
Mm-hmm. Usually it's like, you know, after a big boss or something, you sit the controller down, and then it happens.
Right. Now, these are usually in the middle of the battle, so far at least.
Middle, and some at the very end, but for the most part, you should just get through a whole battle, and then they happen.
So, let me ask. Where does this rank in the list of Final Fantasy sequels?
It's
probably the best sequel.
Okay.
Now, granted, I haven't actually played 13 or 10-2 yet. But...
Okay. Jerry, what are your thoughts? Is it better than 10-2? Better than For the After Years? Than 7 Crisis Core? 12 Revenant Wings?
Wasn't Crisis Core a prequel?
I don't know.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Fine.
I mean,
the 7 is the sequel.
The sequel. Dirge of Cerberus.
Yes, yeah. I was going to bring up Dirge of Cerberus.
Oh, no.
In terms of gameplay, 10-2 and 13-2 are pretty head-to-head there. And in gameplay. I haven't gotten far enough on 13-2's plot to actually judge it on that, though 10-2's plot is garbage.
10-2 doesn't even really have a plot.
Yeah, but
yeah, but the fight system in that game.
In terms of how fun the games are, 13-2 is pretty much the best so far.
Okay.
So how do the choices you get to make and the time travel stuff? How much do those affect the story, or is it all kind of happening? Is it all the same no matter what choices?
Yeah, I mean, is it a plot device basically, where it just determines what the next level is, or are you actually going all Radiant Historia in the second?
I want to say that there are choices that determine what you do, because I just earlier on finished the boss battle where it gave me like a trigger for me to pick a choice on what to do, and I knew what the right one is, and I picked that one, but it was like
Paragon option
to retry that boss battle just to see what happens if I pick a wrong option there.
Yeah, you can cancel all the options you made in a previous time segment and play them over again to get different endings.
Oh, that's cool.
It is nice to hear that you don't have to replay the entire game.
No, you can close off specific segments of the game and just replay those segments.
That is nice.
But like the boss battle I just finished, I got like the right choice, and then I got other stuff like throwing a Moogle at the boss, and I kind of want to pick that.
I want to throw Moogles at other Moogles.
I've only seen one Moogle so far.
I want Moogles to be further away from me than they are, so I want to throw them.
So you want a mini game where you throw Moogles?
Yeah.
I see a triple triad type game of Moogle throwing in the future.
I could see, you know, just a little bit more Disgaea and Final Fantasy Tactics, and you could throw Moogles.
Well, yeah. You should be happy then, Graham, because throwing Moogles is a mechanic in the game.
But then, like, then they come back, so you can throw them again, right? I just want them away from me.
Well, in the place I was just in, there was this giant chasm, and I threw the Moogle down there, and he didn't come back for, like, a whole minute.
Okay, I mean...
That's a minute of no Moogles.
That's a fair compromise, I guess. Temporarily no Moogles.
You're basically saying you hate Moogles.
I don't hate Moogles, I just don't want them to be near me.
Are you allergic?
Are you allergic?
I have no issue with their existence. I just wish that their existence took place in places that were not around me. I didn't have to know about the Moogles.
You want there to be like legends of Moogles that you never see throughout each game? Like,
I want to be blissfully ignorant of Moogles.
That'll be hard because the weapon is actually a Moogle that transforms into your weapon.
I was going to say, this is probably not the game for you.
Okay. Speaking of, is this the game for you? There are a lot of people that held out and didn't play 13 because everybody said it was bad. Is 13 2 for people who haven't played 13?
Yep.
Sure.
You think people don't need to know what happened in 13 to enjoy this game?
Well, there is a recap at the beginning, so.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's also the entire data log of events that happened in the first game is available from the beginning. So you can just read what happened. And for people that didn't like if they didn't like going through the gameplay or the 20-hour tutorial, then yes.
Okay.
Fair. That's the other thing is that you have access to everything within like 3 or 4 hours.
Yes, you are.
Okay, I just got to a segment in the game where my first initial thought was this entire place was just made for people who kept complaining about no towns in the first game.
So there are towns.
So you're saying it's a town?
It's enormous. Like,
okay, it's a place that was created because people complained there weren't towns in the first game.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's a town.
It's a town.
Okay,
so
great.
When they first started with 13 too, that was the first thing they did, was make that big town, and then go from there.
I'm pretty sure the first thing is that they held meetings like, all right, we don't want to call it quick time events. Let's take 3 weeks and come up with a better term.
I could buy that.
Well, they didn't take any of the people off their duties of creating spiky hair and buttons, but everybody else, zippers. Just everybody else. All right, go in a corner. Come up with something.
You could also jump, apparently. You can jump.
Yes, you can jump.
Whoa.
Is that... And chocobos can jump and hover.
What?
Yeah.
Hover.
Hover.
You hump and you hold down circle and they just hover through the air.
Do they hover like Peach or do they hover like Luigi?
They hover like just flying, flapping their wings. They hover like Zelda chickens.
Yeah, huh. Zelda chickens.
Okay. I wish they just have Zelda chickens. They're better.
But then you can't ride
them. Chocobos are much better than Zelda chickens.
I was going to say, they are. I do like chocobos.
Okay. Fine.
See, I don't know if you can race them this time.
I like the kind of like friendly chocobos and not the ones that look like they're trying to look like real animals.
These are friendly.
Well, I mean like...
You can ride them inside too.
Like, almost like the kind of, like, spin-off game chocobos, like, kind of the...
That try to look too realistic?
The ones in the game, to me, seem like you're trying to make this, like, an actual animal with anatomy and, like, realistic-sized eyes and things.
I have not noticed its eyes, so I can't tell you anything about that.
The eyes for the chocobo in this game are tiny and in humongous bodies, so I'd say apply here.
I love that we're talking about this now.
Yeah, 13-2, great gameplay. I can't judge the plot yet, but it's been pretty okay so far. There's tons of stuff to do in the game. There's gambling, there's chocobo races, there's customizable gameplay everywhere.
Is there chocobo breeding? Because I heard you can get a gold chocobo.
I don't know if there's breeding yet, but I'd imagine so, because, I mean...
You collect animal souls, and then...
so far, the only enemies I've seen that they let me get multiples of are Chocobo, so I'd imagine there's some breeding mechanic there.
The Chocobo Garden? You can make it good or evil by feeding it things.
That's what Sonic Generations needed, I think.
Chocobos?
No.
Would have fixed everything.
Yes. Sonic doesn't need to run anymore, he just rides Chocobo.
So it's already like a time paradox. Go ahead and put some dimensions in there. Like, what? Why? What?
I was talking about the Chao Garden, but yeah, that's
yes. Chocobo. No, if there really were some... Yeah, they should bring back the Chao Garden in some interesting way. Because yes. I think that was what made... I mean, to a lesser extent, Sonic Adventure, but definitely Sonic Adventure 2. Going back and playing that, those levels weren't... I mean, they were pretty good, but they weren't appreciably better than other levels and other platformers. But just that, like, that mechanic of being able to collect the little, you know, the little animals and feed them for speed and, like, that was cool.
There was kind of a metagame there where you just went through the stages and if you saw a little critter...
I need to find the purple one. Always the purple one. I don't remember what it did, but I remember that was the one that I wanted to feed. Do you remember?
I kind of remember. I just remember the last thing I did. I had the good and evil gardens and I was very happy about it.
I didn't have the evil gardens.
Oh,
it was so cool.
I couldn't bring myself to do it. I had the good gardens really quick.
God, I spent hundreds of hours in that Chocobo garden.
Chao Garden.
You ruined me.
What about a Chao riding a Chocobo?
No, I want a Chocobo riding a Chao. A baby one that's crawling along the grass.
Riding in his afro?
Yes.
Yep.
While throwing a Moogle.
No, the Moogle's not there. The Moogle's somewhere else in my ideal situation. Okay. Moogle's not there.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not dead. It's not unhappy. It's just not bothering me.
It's happy somewhere else.
Yeah. Like I don't want to harm it. I just don't want it around. You know. All right.
And what do we even talk about? I don't know.
So, okay, let's move on. And I've been playing Soul Calibur 5.
Have you been throwing Moogles in it?
Moogles are not in that game. That's one of the things I like about it.
Can you create a character that looks like a Moogle?
Probably not.
Can you ride a Chocobo in it?
Probably not.
Then I do not care about this game.
Okay.
Yeah, you might as well just move on. I think you lost all of our interest.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's an interesting sequel.
Wait, first, before we get it started, yeah. What is your experience with the series? Have you played everyone up to this point? Are you very familiar with the series?
I did not at the time play the original Soul Calibur, but I've played it since.
Okay.
I got really into the series with 2 when it showed up in the game.
Oh, yeah. 2 is my favorite.
It was the fighting game on the GameCube. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it sold more in the GameCube than any other system, which is crazy because it's a GameCube. But then I picked up 3. That was actually the first game I played on a PS2. Well, on my PS2, I'd played some other people's, but it made me pick up the system because I liked 2 so much.
3 was such a disappointment.
3 was a disappointment. I was less disappointed than others. Shut up.
Sorry.
I was less disappointed than others because I am a sucker for the character creation mode that it introduced.
Yeah. And 3 still have one of the better character creators.
And 3 had interesting single player mode where it really introduced some of those, like, you know, actual things you could spend time doing playing by yourself, which was great because I've never been a competitive fighter player. So
yeah, that's what always interested me in Soul Calibur is that it always had great single player content.
Yeah, which we can skip to 5 now.
Four doesn't even exist.
Well, I mean, four.
It had Yoda. I mean, come on.
It had Yoda and Vader and Starkiller, and that was dumb.
It really was.
But it was basically the HD version of 3, that game. It added more to the character creator.
Only with less content.
Right. But it,
exactly, like the HD version of an older game. They removed some content.
Yeah. So 5 is interesting because it's not everything 4 had plus more. It does take the basic fighting system of 4, but it simplifies some of the special moves, so that every character has like a special move that you can do with the same sort of motions, so that it's a little easier to pick up and play. All the other specials they have are still kind of crazy and whatever it is you need to learn, but at least like someone sitting down can just be like, all right, you do this and then you can do a special. And so that part's nice, but they did add a special meter to the game and you have to like save up to use them.
Oh, okay.
Have you been enjoying the fan fiction mode?
What?
the game story mode.
Right.
Is that bad?
It's pretty bad. Okay.
Yeah.
So
I've seen cutscenes.
You know, in previous games, the story mode, there was one for each character. There was kind of like an intro story and a conclusion story, but there wasn't much there. But at least each character had its own thing. In this game, they tried to make this story based on Sophitia's kids, Patroclus and Pyrrha, and basically. You're playing as, I think there are like 2 missions where you get to play as someone else, but then the other like 22, you're playing as mostly Patroclus and occasionally Pyrrha.
But you also play as Pyrrha Omega and Alpha Patroclus.
Yeah, which was dumb. So what happens is you get in there and there are a couple like CG cutscenes, and those aren't bad. But between every other mission, like, you know, like 20 of the 24 or something. It's just basically they sketched out storyboards, but at some point decided they weren't going to actually animate those. And so they just show storyboard sketches on the screen with voice acting.
So do you feel it was probably rushed, basically?
Yes. I mean, I think I'd be okay with it if it were a longer story mode or if they had them for multiple characters. But if you're going to like make this big deal of this story mode, you know, set the game 17 years later so that you can have this story happen and, you know, only have this, you know, this focused only a couple hour long story mode.
Yeah, I was going to say if you're going to make a story mode that is focused on just 2 characters, you know, that you might as well make it much longer.
Yeah, right. The best part is what Jerry mentioned was go ahead.
Yeah, you'd think that they'd actually incorporate all the characters into the story, but there's characters in the game that just don't show up in the story at all.
And there are new characters in the game that don't show up in the story at all, which is weird.
So they just come out of nowhere.
Like Jerry mentioned, they have two of the game's secret characters are Alpha Patroclus and Pyrrha Omega, which are just the 2 main characters. It's dumb.
It's the dumbest names ever.
Yeah, and it's like the Greek symbols. But so what happens is Patroclus gets the Soul Calibur, and all of a sudden he has different moveset because he has Soul Calibur. Pyrrha gets Soul Edge. And since she has a big sword and not the little tiny, like, Cassandra-style sword and shield, she has different moveset.
And basically, Patroclus, whatever his name is, turns into Setsuka.
Kind of. I mean, it's not quite Setsuka, but, yeah, it's pretty close. But rather than have those characters come back, it's like, oh, you can have that, but it's this dude again. And the other secret characters, I won't try to spoil it too much, are dumb. Sorry, that's it. They're dumb. Okay. Actually, you know what? I'm going to spoil it because it's too dumb.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
The final boss is like, it's like an angel in the form of Sophitia that isn't her, but has all of her moves. But it's just her with like a helmet on.
Huh.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to bring her back. Then they brought Keelik back without his moves. He's like Edgemaster now. He has all the weapons.
Yeah, he has all the male weapons.
Ah, yeah, sure.
That's That's stupid.
But
there's basically three Edge Masters in the game.
I was gonna say then there's also Edge Master.
Oh great.
Yeah.
And
Edge Master actually uses all the moves. Akilik uses all the male moves, and the Angel Sophitia uses all the female moves.
Right. But defaults to Sophitia more, at least in my experience. That's really dumb.
Yes.
Keelik's back, but he isn't Keelik anymore.
That character that everyone knows.
And we've replaced Keelik with Sheba, who talks about food all the time. And I play a lot of Keelik, so now I use Sheba, but I don't use Sheba. I use created characters with the style of Sheba.
Oh, okay.
That's my main, is one of seven people I've created that
have what's his character's name?
I have seven of them.
Name them.
Okay, we're gonna do this now.
Why not?
One of them is just me, that I've created me.
Oh, okay. Are one you a good fighter?
I'm as good as Sheba.
Okay.
Exactly as good, no better. Let's see, Charles.
Barkley?
No, he's just a guy named Charles. When I use characters for me, I just kind of like create them. And there's Natalie. She's short, but like Sheba. Charles is big and like Sheba, and I'm normal size and like Sheba. They play differently.
Of course.
I'm trying to remember the other ones, but I don't remember their names.
Are they all like Sheba?
They're all like Sheba. Though I take the characters that I don't particularly like, even though I want to use their moves, and I create costumes for them that I think are less objectionable. The game adds, you can put little objects on people in addition to changing their clothing. And the first object that popped up is this like 3D heart. So what I did is I put it over the eye on Nightmare's chest, and then I like gave him a red afro and like a clown outfit. And
that sounds like the nightmare I want to play as.
Yeah. He's friendship is his, you know, he doesn't want souls. He wants friends.
Do you think the gameplay has suffered at all because of the, you know, rushed story and trying to cram that stuff in there?
You know, that's the thing, is that they've really focused on online, and that's where they clearly put a lot of work. And I don't have as much experience with it as Eric does, and he reviewed that for us. But neither of us have experienced any lag or anything like that. It's a pretty nice online mode. There's a lot. You earn levels and titles and things like that.
How is Ezio? Is he awesome?
He's all right. But his fighting style makes sense in a Soul Calibur game.
I was going to say, he's the first cameo character.
The only thing that bothers me is that they tried to write a story justification for why he's there.
Time travel?
Time travel.
Okay.
There's missing data from the Animus. There's evidence that he briefly appeared 100 years later.
That's great.
In this random island with a whole bunch of strong fighters, and then came back between his adventures in Rome and his adventures. No!
That's amazing,
don't
write though.
This story! No! Just say, hey, look, you can play as Ezio. Don't write.
Like, just show a portal opening and Ezio falls out of it.
Right. That would have been better to me. Yes.
But the justification for why Darth Vader was in the Soul Calibur era was fantastic.
Don't.
I don't know. I don't remember what that was. What was it?
Basically, Vader sensed a disturbance in the Force. He went to investigate, and he went back to his world holding both Soul Calibur and Soul Edge.
Oh, man.
That does sound pretty awesome.
Soul Calibur, the series in general, has an amazing story. We can all agree on this. Of course.
Sure.
I think we're going to see this kind of crap a lot more after last year's Mortal Kombat game, actually. You know what I mean? Like how they kind of went for the reboot and kind of made this... They took that ridiculous story and kind of made it cool and fun, but also in a really good story mode where like you went through and played as all the different characters and they all made sense together. It kind of feels like we're... But there are still games that understand that fighting games don't really need a great story all the time, like Street Fighter, where they're just like, whatever, it's crazy.
Yeah.
which is what Soul Calibur always was. They focused on the gameplay and the character. Because fighting games are character-driven, not story-driven most of the time.
Right.
Because it doesn't work, usually, like this.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to finish up talking about it, the disappointing thing about it is that they've gotten rid of a lot of those single-player like challenge modes and like the RPG kind of strategy-ish things that they have done before. And
makes me sad.
Their single-player mode is their online mode with made-up opponents, with made-up screen names and made-up custom characters. And it's all right.
That's always been a thing, though.
Well, I mean, that's it. That's the single-player mode. And I mean, the thing they've done is when you beat these characters, you get titles that you can use online for yourself, and there are a couple hundred of them. But that's basically it. And I don't know, it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. It's basically Namco's version of Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
We're gonna get Ultimate Soul Calibur 5 later this year.
Yep.
Okay. I think it's cool that Ezio has a move called Full Synchronization. I'm just going to say that. Okay.
One reason why I haven't actually bothered to check Soul Calibur 5 out is because I'm still a little miffed that they actually took Talon out of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is disappointing. I mean, they took a lot of people out of the game, but generally replaced most of them with similar people.
That's what I mean. Like, they at least bothered to replace some other people in the game, or just have them directly, like, fucking Algol still in the game for some reason.
Yeah.
And but Talon, who's been a mainstay since 2, but isn't here in any form.
Yeah, and there's no way to create her as a custom character or anything like that, because there are not Tonfas, which is unfortunate. They did put the Soul of Devil Jin from Tekken in that you can create custom characters like, right? That's what you wanted? That was what was missing, right? Right? Soul Calibur? Devil Jin?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's one reason why I like games made by Arc System Works. Because those games usually have a comprehensive story mode, but they always justify bringing a character back, even if it makes no sense in the plot.
Yeah. All right. Soul Calibur 5. Pretty good. If you like Soul Calibur, you'll like the Soul Calibur.
But if you like playing Soul Calibur by yourself, you're kind of screwed.
I mean, that said, I don't know how much people like playing those games by themselves.
But it
allows you to kind of train up and get good at it, and there's less of that. If you don't want to play online, it might not be worth getting it right now. But it's a solid release.
It's just kind of a shame that we've come to this point when Soul Calibur 2 and 3 had fantastic single player modes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. 4 didn't so much, and I think we've lost a lot of that in this generation, especially like with series that make the jump. When they make the jump to HD, they never bring those in-depth modes for the first installment, and then they never add them back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad, but it's what happens. But, yeah. So, Andrew, what have you been playing?
I've been still catching up on 2011, but I could talk about game demos.
Seems good.
If we want to remain topical.
Let's be topical just for a second.
Okay.
Then we can go back to talking about the Chow Garden.
All right, sure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So demos.
Demos. Twisted Metal. It is a great update of Twisted Metal. So from what I could tell, that game does not seem to be something that will be a huge focus for people who want to play by themselves. Which I don't know why you would want to play Twisted Metal by yourself. But the online, from what I could tell, the online seems pretty cool. I think there were some hiccups with connecting to players, I think, the day the demo came out. But I never experienced that myself. I heard from other people.
That demo wasn't... It's not going to be available for very long, right?
Is it? Is it not? I don't know.
As I understand, I think the online cut off or something like that.
Huh, maybe.
But yeah. I'm interested in Twisted Metal, but
It's if jumping into Twisted Metal, a Twisted Metal game in 2012 is very weird because there's nothing else like it, and the controls are strange for a game that involves you driving a car because you use the square button to accelerate and the shoulder buttons for weird, right? And the shoulder buttons are for shooting weapons, and it's like but that is Twisted Metal, and
are there options?
I did not investigate that far.
I remember reading that there are alternate control options, but not like you being able to set what button does what.
Yeah, I think they might just have different custom control schemes, but nothing like where you can just say I want R1 to be accelerate or.
Yeah, well, if they don't have one where the shoulder buttons do the driving and the face buttons do the weapons, then I don't understand what they're doing.
But, yeah, it is weird, but I mean, I
understand like, that's what they used to do, and that's fine, but it just our standards, I think, have changed now a little bit.
Yeah, I understand. I got used to it pretty quickly. I just kind of felt like, you know what, I'm going to accept that this is Twisted Metal and this is different, so I'm going to go with this. This is, you know, it took quite a long time to get used to, because I was still pressing R1, shooting a missile, like, oh, wait, that's not how you go forward, but... It's very strange, and the tutorial isn't that great, because when you first start playing the single player, they give you this tutorial, just like, do this move, do this thing three times, do this thing three times. Okay, now here's a bunch of cars shooting at you, go. And you know, you're still kind of like, wait, how do I, but I don't under, and then you blow up, and that's the end. But great. Eventually, give it time, and I think people who have never played Twisted Metal before might be put off by the default control scheme. But I think there should be an option for people who are not used to that. And then the online's great there. They only had two modes. They had Team Deathmatch and one called Nuke, which was about different teams of like there's different teams this time instead of having like different characters.
Yeah.
You select your car, like all the cars are different and have different specials, but you could play a Sweet Tooth in any car or Calypso in any car. So it's kind of weird and different, but they do it for a team-based mode called Nuke, where you have a team of Sweet Tooths versus a team of I don't know, Calypso-type guys, and you're basically trying to go and set off this nuke to destroy the other team before they set off their nuke, and it's very weird, but it kind of works. It's not what I expected, but it's a lot of fun once you get used to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is interesting to see people try to create new modes for those games.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing you need to do if you're going to try to get a lot of people who are, you know, those kind of hardcore online multiplayer people who have largely just been in FPSs, is you have to make this interesting over the long term.
And it seems like that. I don't know all the other modes they have, but it seems like it's a decent list of them in the full game, so...
As long as there aren't too many modes. As long as they can have enough to support players for all of them.
Can there be too many modes?
If they spread it so thin that their player base can't, you know, if matchmaking becomes an issue because there are only seven people playing and they're in the game already.
It's safe to assume that right now I'm sure they're not going to have too many, but if the game, you know, sells well and is pretty popular online, I'm sure they're going to add new modes as it goes on, but... I don't remember the exact number, but the demo only had two, and one of which was like one of the big new modes they're bringing to the series, and it was fun. Team Deathmatch is still fun too. The stages all have, you know, there's only two stages, one for Nuke and one for Team Deathmatch, but they're both good stages. They have plenty of secret stuff, you know. You can drive around.
Did you try the helicopter?
Oh, yeah, I never tried the helicopter. I wanted to, but I never did. I just went with bigger truck. All these vehicles are. I think I played as Outlaw. I played as some big truck that I can't remember the name of, and then I played as the motorcycle guy. I think it's Grim. I can't remember. And then I never tried the helicopter, but it seems like an interesting
helicopter's thing. Strange.
Yeah, I mean, helicopters in video games usually are kind of weird because they I don't know they just control weird. But I assume flying a helicopter is weird, so. I don't know.
Flying a helicopter is weird.
I'm sure. Yeah. But no, it's a really fun demo. Definitely, I'm very, very hopeful for the final game.
Great. Didn't you play one more demo?
I played a few demos, but I could talk about a recent one, just Syndicate.
Great. Yeah, so Syndicate. Let me ask you this. Did you ever play the original Syndicate?
That's the thing. I've never played the original Syndicate.
What do you know about it?
It's a strategy type game?
Yeah. Well, you know what?
I don't know much about Syndicate.
There are a lot of people around who have been really vocal about how it should be like the old Syndicate, but I'd imagine that about 99.8% of people haven't played Syndicate.
Yeah, this is like
so. This is basically what is this?
Okay, well, the thing is, yeah, this isn't like XCOM. The XCOM complaints kind of made sense, but now they're making an XCOM strategy game for everyone who wanted that. So there's that. But to make this like the old game, it would be kind of silly. But it's very complex. It is nothing like any shooter. Well, the controls are basically, you know, standard shooter controls, but
right.
It's kind of I don't even think I fully understand it yet, because they drop, it's only co-op, so they drop you right into this level, and there's like they're just like, go have fun. As soon as you start, there's already like four guys shooting at you, and you could shoot them, but then there's so many different things you could do. You can hack them. You can hack control panels that are near you to turn off things.
You can hack people.
You can hack your partner, your co-op partner, to heal them.
It seems like they just let you do that.
So
that's not hacking.
Well, it's not hacking, no. But it's,
it's good not, then.
Okay, but it is. There's a term for it in the game, but I can't remember it. I apologize. But
that's all right.
This is a hard demo to try to explain to people.
Let me ask, is the shooting itself, is it very tactical? Is it like very like Rainbow Six Vegas, kind of like moving as a team, you go here, I go there type thing? Or is it kind of freeform? Yes.
I think Rainbow Six Vegas, that's a good comparison. Or,
okay.
I don't know, like a first-person Ghost Recon, or like the old Ghost Recon games, basically.
Right. But,
it's not like you can't run and gun. You will die pretty quickly.
Okay.
I learned this the hard way. So did my friend. So we basically had to try to like figure out the controls and everything on the spot while getting shot at by everyone. So we died a lot at first. We came pretty close to the end, but it requires more tactics than every other shooter on the market, basically, that I can think of. It seems like, I can't speak to what Syndicate was, but it seems like it's very strategic. So does that mean it's like the original Syndicate? I don't know, but it's not.
No.
They're not just turning Syndicate into a mindless run and gun Call of Duty clone. So anyone
that's too bad, because it would sell a lot better.
Call of Duty edition. Sure, I'm sure. Yeah, but
Medal of Syndicate.
Medal of Syndicate. Yep.
That's actually what it is. This is the Medal of Honor sequel.
Of course.
Yep.
But what I don't really know what else to say about it. I recommend everyone who has even the slightest interest, grab a friend or three friends and download this demo and give it a shot and see what you think, because it's really tough to try and describe. But
is the co-op online only?
I didn't try doing local. But okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure in the demo it was just online only. I don't know about the full game. There is no online pass, which is good. I think the quote from the team was they want as many people to experience the co-op as possible, because it seems like the co-op is a huge part of it.
Yeah,
basically. I mean, there is a single player. I don't know anything about it. But
yep. Well, I mean, we'll take a look at it when it comes out and let you know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. I wish I could say more about it, because I feel like there's so much to it, but I just can't kind of find the words to describe any of it. It's
great.
Very strange, but worth playing. I had fun with it. So, great. I mean, that's something.
All right, well, before we move on, Matt, you've been playing anything topical?
Why would I play new games?
Okay, then.
You told me not to talk about anything I've been playing.
Oh, if Matt's not talking, then can I mention some brief words about the Binary Domain demo?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, I played that too.
I completely forgot about that demo.
Yeah.
How is that game?
Oh, because it's not in the U.S. in the U.S. markets yet.
Oh.
So.
Right.
Yeah, it's Japan only right now.
Oh.
But yeah, okay. I was kind of wary on binary domain at the start because it's the Yakuza team.
Binary domain.
Binary, yes. because it's a shooter by the Yakuza team, and the last shooter they made wasn't particularly good. It being the Yakuza spinoff with zombies,
which still isn't even out here yet.
No, not over here, but if you play the Japanese demo for the game, it's pretty terrible.
Great.
But after playing their new game, and it's pretty fantastic. Like, just from what I've played, without understanding a single thing they're saying, or being able to use the voice commands in the game, it is pretty great.
I think games like that probably get better the less you know what's going on. Well, I find that with localization, like, you know what? No. I don't even want to know the plot of this game. Nope. I'd rather you just be saying sounds right now.
Yep. Sure, but great. What I mean is, like, Binary Domain actually has some of the best visual feedback of, like, from shooting an enemy I've seen in a shooter. Like, period.
Do they die when you shoot them?
Well, sure. Yeah, that's not what I mean.
They fall over.
In terms of, like, you destroy their body parts and stuff, and they could still kind of fight. Shoot at you. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like that. There is incredible visual feedback, and like you're shooting an enemy in the arm, and you can see as the robots that you're shooting at actually take damage, and the parts that you're shooting at degrade and eventually break apart. And they, of course, they're gonna keep fighting however they can. Like you can shoot a robot in the leg and then the arm, and he'll just keep limping at you, shooting at you, hopping on one leg. Or what I did, which was just fantastic, was that I shot a robot in the head, blew his head off, and the robot just started walking around and shooting the other enemies.
Yeah, I always thought that was really cool when I first started seeing the game, and it actually really works because it adds some weird tactical advantages to getting headshots. If you want, like, if you have a ton of enemies nearby and you kind of want another enemy to be a distraction to those enemies, shooting them in the head works, or kind of disabling them in some other way.
And like shooting them in the head isn't always the best option, because like there's these robots that show up in the second demo mission that are way too fast to just line up for a headshot. So you just shoot them in the leg and then take care of them.
So right? it's more than just like originally kind of people were saying, it's just another Gears of War clone.
Like, the game itself may not be like the most original plot, or I don't know, the most original setting even, but I was really impressed how solid the controls was. Like, I could just jump into the game, and I didn't feel lost with the control at any point, even without being able to understand like the initial tutorial.
I couldn't figure out how to invert the Y axis. I invert my aiming when I play shooters, and I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. So it was a little weird, but that's the only problem I had, because I can't read Japanese.
Yeah, well, it will be interesting to see that when it releases. When is that one coming out here?
That one is
the 28th.
The 28th.
I want to say it's the end of February, 28th.
All right. Well, then that is soon, then.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That is the week after Syndicate. So lots of shooters.
I don't understand.
With tactical elements.
I don't believe you. As I understand it, the Vita comes out, and then that's it. That's
February has too much stuff coming out.
That's game for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. There are no more games.
No, I thought we said that with Never Dead.
Hmm.
Okay, I'll just.
You're right. These games don't even exist. Nope. Whoa. Why are we still here? Why aren't we all not playing Never Dead? It's a waste of time.
Who says we aren't playing Never Dead right now?
But does Never Dead have a Chocobo Garden?
I never stopped
probably
playing
does.
Never Dead.
I don't, you know.
Oh, yeah. I gotta check it out then.
Whoa.
You could probably throw...
There's only one way to find out whether that game has a Chocobo Garden. Besides asking people who played it.
Looking up videos on YouTube.
And besides that.
By making Andrew play it.
Yep, that's letting there it is.
But right. I'm already playing it. It's fantastic. My review goes up soon. It's amazing.
Great.
Spoilers, 5 out of 5.
Oh.
Sorry to ruin that, but it's the best game of the year.
Okay. Great. All right, so let's wrap things up by talking a little bit about the Game Boy Advance, since our Best to Play Now list went up earlier this week. There was some really heavy debate about this list. Usually it's pretty cut and dry that we, you know, have a couple arguments around the edges, but there's a consensus as to at least six or seven of the ten. Like, these clearly are the ones that deserve to be on this list. And I think with this list, we had about, 25, 30 games that I think legitimately deserved to be on the list.
We had to bring in three extra people.
We did. We had to bring in three extra people. And that was not really even enough. We should have brought in more people, but...
The entire staff.
Yeah.
People who don't even work for Snack Bar. Just get everyone in.
Just all the people. I just started yelling outside, like, "Hey, everybody, what do you think about the Minish Cap?" And, you know, they were like, I don't know. It was pretty good, I guess.
Castlevania or Metroid? Quick. Hurry. Anyone.
Aren't they the same thing?
Of course. That's why we had to debate about it.
Yep. All right. But I thought this would be good to bring up some of the games in the system that are just kind of our favorites that didn't necessarily make the list, but are the kind of games that we like going back to. That there's nothing really like them now.
Final Fantasy V.
Final Fantasy V. Really?
That's a video game.
That's a video game. Anybody who has PlayStation Plus is getting it for free this week.
But that's a terrible version.
It's a terrible version. It's a free version. So it's not that terrible. I like free things.
Would you take Never Dead for free?
Yes.
Okay. I would take it for free.
Yep.
I'm not even sure if I'd take it for free.
I'd take things that are free if they have some sort of value.
If
I
can
take
buy
it for free and sell it to GameStop.
If I can buy terrible games for $20, I can take terrible games for free.
Yep.
So, yeah, the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah. Andrew, we'll start with you. What's talk about Game Boy Advance games.
Okay, well,
what is your personal, your favorite that you really want people to check out?
My favorite already made the list, so I'm quite proud of that.
Actually,
my three favorites made the list, but I guess the one that, well, you'll read about it. Matt wrote about it. It's Astro Boy: The Omega Factor. It's my favorite Game Boy Advance game. But it already made the list, so I don't know should I still talk about it?
I mean, you can, but our readers have checked that out. They're
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's safe to say that one's pretty good. You should play that game.
Yeah. I can say instead. I don't really. All my favorites made the list. Move on. Something else, quick.
Fine. I will take the reins, and you be thinking. I have a game for that system that has not aged that well, and that's why I didn't make this list. But
I know it's just coming.
It's just such a fun little game, and Mode 7 and item collection, and it's Car Battler Joe.
Oh, okay.
Have any of you guys played Car Battler Joe?
I've never played it.
It was published by Natsume in the United States. It was back when they published things that weren't Harvest Moon games. But so it's basically like Pokemon, but instead of creatures that you catch, you build cars with parts that you get by fighting in like Twisted Metal style arena shooting matches with cars.
Oh yeah, that's right. You said that, and then I was like, I should play that game.
You should play that game, actually. Yeah.
Because you said Twisted Metal, so I mean.
Yeah, and it's the guys who developed that have actually only made two games ever: Car Battler Joe for the Game Boy Advance, and Protect Me Night for Xbox Live Indie Games.
Oh, yeah.
Which is weird, because Car Battler Joe is a full, fleshed-out Game Boy Advance game, and to think that, like, from what I can tell, basically they do a lot of contract work otherwise. But it's just kind of interesting to see that there was this thing made, and it's the one thing that they've ever released. But it's really interesting. You have like a garage with parts that boost your shooting and your speed and your defense, and you know, the dialogue's really bad, and that's okay because it's just a JRPG, but it's a JRPG with such an interesting battle mechanic.
Sounds cool.
You should play it.
I want to play it. I need to get another Game Boy player for the GameCube, so I don't have one anymore.
You do need to get one of those. I'm not entirely sure you should play Car Battler Joe on any screen larger than a Game Boy Advance.
But I hate handhelds, remember?
You do hate handhelds.
The Nomad.
Just get a little TV.
Okay.
Just a little one.
I'll get one then.
Yeah, like a little handheld TV that you just prop up, connected to your GameCube. Yeah.
Okay. Or you could ask a modder to make it so you can play Car Battler Joe on your Nomad.
Oh, man. That would be amazing.
I mean, it seems pretty easy to do. You just put a Game Boy in there. Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah.
But
I thought of a game.
Okay. What's the game?
Nobody's ever heard of this one. I'm just warning you right now.
Great.
It's called Fire Emblem.
Oh, right. Yeah.
No one knows.
No one here likes Fire Emblem.
No, it's such a shame because the wrong tactics game made the list, which has a Final Fantasy in the name, but it's not Fire Emblem.
I totally agree. Now, I do like Final Fantasy Tactics Advance a lot, but Fire Emblem, such a good game, and I think Fire Emblem 7, which was released as Fire Emblem over here, I think it probably has the most solid self-contained story.
I agree.
Yep.
I think having the three protagonists made things interesting with, you know, kind of your tutorial protagonist, your main game protagonist, and your New Game Plus protagonist, which is, that's just interesting, with different missions and things like that.
And actually playing through the tutorial protagonist, but not actually losing the progress that you made with him.
Right. The tutorial protagonist actually just that. I mean, it was tutorial, but also that was part of the game, which it was interesting. And, I mean, I just love that game. Sometimes I hate that game. When I'm having to reset in the middle of a battle, I hate that game. But every other time, I love that game.
That's not how you play Fire Emblem. You gotta not reset. Gotta let them die. Just gotta let them go.
I do let some people die occasionally. And I do... I never intended on using.
Okay.
You know, there are some of those missions earlier where it's like, oh, you get this person, they show up on the map. Like, if I'm not going to use them, I don't care if I ever get them.
Uh-huh.
But no, I do know, you know, later in the series, Shadow Dragon specifically tried to make people feel okay about letting people die by, like, giving them replacement characters, basically. Giving them supplemental characters if they let people die.
But, you actually have to let people die if you want to see all the chapters in that game.
Right. And that's how they do it, is if you've lost a certain number of people to this point, then you get this extra mission, and you get through this mission, and you get more people as a result of having gotten through that mission. You know, I think that game, even on normal, that game's not easy.
No.
And if you're doing badly enough to lose a couple characters, that makes it even harder later if you don't have those characters. So
this is gonna sound weird. Well, maybe not, but I think the reason I love this series is because of the permadeath. I think it adds such a weight to each battle.
Especially if
you don't reset. But, sure. I used to reset all the time, but then I learned it's just more fun if you just don't, because then the story moves on, you know, you lost some comrades.
Right. And again, I think some of the games where you have more people than you need to put in a lot of the time, then that's fine. Seven, I've always felt like Seven didn't have that many superfluous characters.
No.
And Eight was good because if you lost someone, you could go back and grind a little bit to train someone up.
Yeah, Eight was super easy.
I mean, there was that. If you chose to grind, if you didn't, then it was just as tough.
But I think Seven is the best Fire Emblem we've gotten so far. So I really like the original. I'm not going to say the original one we got.
Yeah. I mean, that game was really good. I'd make a case for Radiant Dawn. I think there are some things about that game that aren't as good, but then, like, the branching storylines and the fact that you have to, like, you know, choose the people to go with which groups and work with these different characters and different situations, I think setting up a lot of those situations was interesting, where you really did have to, like, keep switching back and forth, and it was kind of like a crew management kind of thing. I liked that a lot. But, I mean, I do think it's down to that one and 7.
I actually like Path of Radiance better than Radiant Dawn. I haven't finished Radiant Dawn, though. That's the thing. I don't even own it, but...
I'd agree with Path of Radiance if it wasn't for the second half to that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does start to drag. And I do think Path of Radiance... The one story in Path of Radiance is better than one of the three stories in Radiant Dawn, but then Radiant Dawn has the three stories, and I think that's what makes that game great.
Okay.
But anyway, yes, I'm totally with you on Fire Emblem. Everybody should play that game. The Sacred Stones was available as an Ambassador game, and that's a great place to start. But people should definitely track down the first GBA Fire Emblem, well, the second GBA Fire Emblem.
Yes.
They should play that one. And
even if I never play it, I really hope we get the 3DS Fire Emblem.
Oh, we better get that game.
It looks really good. Looks really good.
Yeah. And, you know, I know Shadow Dragon did not perform well, but I hope they realize it's because Shadow Dragon was not very good. And not because people don't want to play Fire Emblem games here. But we'll see. Hey, Sean.
Yo.
GBA games.
The only ones I really played were Pokemon and Fire Emblem.
Those are good.
Fire Emblem.
Yeah, I've never heard of Fire Emblem. Tell me about it.
Sorry, what is that game?
It's a game where your characters can die permanently.
I'm sold.
Great.
I'm going to go buy a copy right now.
I have 3. That's not true. Really? I don't have 3.
It's a series of games.
I do have 2
games where every game has a Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that is interesting, and I like seeing the ways in which they implement that, because there is a Fire Emblem in each Fire Emblem game, but that means something different in each one.
Yeah.
There's some, like, object or thing or something that is a Fire Emblem, but it's not like this story. It's not like the Triforce. It's not like... sometimes it functions in such a, like, powerful way, but, like, it's not... Here's this legendary thing that people have gotten. It means something different every time, which is...
Has it ever been literally an emblem that's on fire? They can't find a place in the story to put...
I haven't played Thrasia 776.
So they do feel like they have a scene where one of the characters is like, oh man, my emblem's on fire. And then that's it.
You know that's going to happen. They're going to forget one time and they're like, oh no. We need to fix this in dialogue and just some side story before the final mission. Like, this emblem, it's on fire now.
Exactly. It'd be great. I want this to be a thing now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah?
GBA games.
Final Fantasy V.
You're sticking to that one.
I'm sticking to that one. Though, let's see. Final Fantasy V.
Sure.
You can go with Final Fantasy V and make the list.
So, Final Fantasy V. What about... Hey, I'm going to say words. What about Final Fantasy V makes it a special thing to go back to in the context of the Final Fantasy series? Because I know 4 is really celebrated, and 6 is... kind of what I can tell is the kind of critic's pick for here's the good one to go back to.
It's just, I don't know. I've made it abundantly clear in the past that I'm a gameplay kind of guy. Like,
right.
Plot can go to hell if a game has great gameplay.
Sure.
And I just really like the gameplay in Final Fantasy V because it's what the about most customizable cool? of all the games. Like, you can, like, the fact that there was an event a while back where people would play through the entire game with just 4 randomly generated jobs, like pick that job and only use that job for the whole game and actually make it through the whole game, is a testament to how really customizable the game is.
So, for people who haven't played Final Fantasy V, which, as it turns out, that's a lot of people, because that game has only barely been released in the U.S. I mean, yes, there was the GBA version, and then there was the PS1 version, but, like, it wasn't really, you know, a big thing in the U.S. Yeah. Is there something that has come after it that kind of copies its gameplay? Is there something more common that people who haven't played it, or even, you know, less common, but...
I want to say the only thing I've played in the series that's somewhat approached the gameplay in Final Fantasy V would be Final Fantasy XI, and that's just because it lets you swap out of any job that you're using at any point and mix and match skills between jobs and stuff like that. But other than that, like, no other game in the series has gone back to the type of gameplay that 3 and 5 had.
And okay. to be fair, the version of Final Fantasy V on the Game Boy Advance is the best version of that game. So,
yeah. So I mean, so basically, it's this job sense system. So there are, I mean, I we've seen a lot of interesting job systems since. So I mean, like, it was interesting for then. Is there anything like that really hasn't been replicated?
Well, I don't know. I've seen other job systems, but they haven't really let you be as free form over how you want to play the game, as opposed to how 5 did it, where in other games with job systems, you usually have to go with, like, a predetermined set of jobs. Like, you have to have your healer, you have to have your tank, you have to have your damage dealer, if you want to actually make good, steady progress, but which isn't the case for 5 at all.
All right, that's fair. But yeah, so generally, if you haven't played a lot of GBA games, play them, right?
Yep.
It's a really good system. You should play that thing. And we didn't get to put it on the list, even though there were some strong, strong objections. But it wasn't a game. The Game Boy Player is a great way to play a lot of these games.
I can't put a Game Boy Player in my Game Boy Advance and play it. It sounded like a great game.
Believe me, I've tried to come up with a way where I could... No, not quite. If I could do that, I'd do that.
So you just have a Game Boy Player, but I do have a Super Game Boy. Does that count?
Super Game Boy's alright. You know.
You could change the color scheme.
You can. It's pretty good. You know, Metroid 2 is a lot better in orange, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to try it.
Yeah. All right. But we've gone long, and we'll go ahead and wrap things up. Anybody want to say anything before we head out?
Go Giants.
That's already happened, Sean.
We're in the future now.
Yes.
We're all riding chocobos in the future.
Sorry. Yay, Giants.
we're watching the Giants ride chocobos in a garden.
Yes.
Yep. That's right.
and throwing Moogles.
No, we already threw the Moogles. The Moogles have been thrown. They're at a distance from us.
They came back.
Time travel. No, they understood the implication.
They wanted to give you a Game Boy Player. They came back with gifts.
I might be okay with them.
Okay.
They give me more Game Boy Players. All right. But yeah. So from Matt, Jerry, Sean, and Andrew, I'm Graham. See you guys in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter @snackbargames.